The Dead Kangaroo and Rotten Tangerine by Rosalie Sorrell, 5 tape number 1, side A, 761 to end.
Father killed a kangaroo, gave me the gristly part to chew. Wasn't that a heck of a thing to do, to give me to chew the gristly part of a dead kangaroo? Hit her in the head with a rotten tangerine, march on, second grade, march on. Now that's all of the words that I can remember.
Welcome to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams. Unusual way to open the program today, hopefully an unusual program. We have with us two gentlemen who are involved with a new project from Utah State University's Special Collections and Archives. It's called Intermountain Song Trails. So, Derek Peter, I'll introduce you a bit later, but what was that?
Well, Joe might be the expertise on that particular recording, which he sent me last night for this program and immediately became the thing I wanted everyone to hear first. And I'll tell you all why that is later, but why don't you tell me about that, Joe?
Well, I don't know much about it, but it's Rosalie Sorrells, who is a really famous mid-century to late 20th century folk singer, songwriter, and she was recorded in 1958 singing some of the songs she knew by Austin Fife, who was the founder of the Fife Folklore Archives, along with his wife, Alta Fife. Do you want me to talk a bit about the Fifes first, or you want to back up?
Let's introduce you, gentlemen, first, and then we'll get into all of that. So you just heard right there from Joe Kinzer. He's community and oral history archivist at Utah State University. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Yeah, thanks for having us.
We also have in studio Derek Peter, folklorist, researcher, performer, lead archivist, and creative director of the Fieldwork Archive. Thanks for coming in.
Well, thanks for having us.
And the project we're going to talk about today is Intermountain Song Trails. So Joe Kinzer, just give us a thumbnail of that. What is Intermountain Song Trails?
Sure. So the project focuses on meaningful songs in people's lives, songs that are particularly tied to place, to the West, or to specific memories of being here and living here in the region. I use those songs as entry points or anchors, as I call them, for broader oral histories. So from one song, we might get stories about family, migration, work, community life in the region. And it's still getting underway. So one of the things we're hoping to do is that people listening might consider contributing their own song memories. And Derek and I are coming at this from slightly different angles, but we're collaborating. And the ways that we're collaborating are really, I think, complementary to each other, and we're excited to be working together.
Yes, we are.
Yeah, this is going to be interesting. You're going to collect these memories, these songs. You're also going to map these, I understand, Joe.
Yeah, so that's I'm hoping long-term to map some of the songs, song memories across the region, connecting them to migration routes and archival collections, and using a platform called Story Maps, which many people might have heard of, and it's really an interactive way you can zoom in, and we're hoping to map like the Oregon Trail, the Mormon Trail, and see what we can do with that with archival recordings, and then kind of map the more contemporary memories as well. And then also link to some of the oral histories that are seeded from those song memories.
Yeah.
Yes, but I want to just jump in and say the map will be absolutely sparse and useless if people don't chime in and give us their songs that they remember of all sizes and shapes and of all, my favorite people in this archive are people that begin with the disclaimer, well, I'm not a singer, but... That's the best way to start a recording in my idea. So a lot of you listening are probably thinking, oh, I wouldn't sing a folk song. Mm-hmm. I mean, my grandma sang this weird thing about a frog when she did dishes, and that's exactly the kind of person I want to talk to.
Or a dead tangerine.
Or right.
Or a dead kangaroo.
Right. Well, why not a dead tangerine too? There might be one out there. So if you go to fieldworkarchive.com, and I'm probably going to say this several times throughout the program, I have an open source Creative Commons website set up of recordings of all stripes. And I'd actually gotten in touch with Joe because in the Fife archives, there are titles that either I've collected that are sort of uncommon or songs I really have yearned for that are indeed quite uncommon. And these were the result of a lot of Fife folklore students interviewing either family members or close friends for their final project. A lot of essays, but not a lot of audio components. So the Intermountain Song Trails kind of bloomed out of this seed of me just saying, Well, wouldn't it be nice to do some recon on some of these Fife folklore students and their families and see what songs are remembered and how that might come to be? And about 2 weeks later, I think I sent you an email, and I'd spoken to three people who were a part of the Fife Folklore Project in the 70s, 80s, and 90s, and already had gotten on the horn with me and sung a couple of songs, some that were in the archive and some that we had no idea they knew. And so that's sort of... everyone can do this. I want it to be a very open, casual song sharing situation. So I'm really inviting people to come forward either to fieldworkarchive.com, go through USU channels, send someone an email or make that phone call. If it's like, you know, and this is probably, as you guys are on your morning commute, it's going to stick in the back of your head. What was that song my grandma used to sing about a frog? Yeah. And that's the kind of stuff that we're looking for. And it may take you a couple days to come up with it or put it together. But those, you know, even a verse or two, that would be amazing. I mean, as you heard with the kangaroo thing, it's not very long. It's kind of silly. But
it'd be a fragment.
It's a low barrier to entry for this. And you do not have to be a singer to sing a folk song.
So fieldworkarchive.com to get to Derek. What about through USU channels? How to get to you, Joe?
So right now we don't have any platform for it other than we have a couple of articles marketing the call for participants. If you just Google Intermountain Song Trails, it should come up. And that's through like USU news channels. And that collection that Derek just mentioned is the Folklore Student Collection, which is sort of a strength of the Fife Folklore Archives. And that's the folklore course that was taught throughout the decades by the folklore program, including Barry Tolkien and our current faculty there, Lynn McNeil, Lisa Gabbert, Jeannie Thomas, Afsana Ridzai. So that's an amazing part of our collection, and it's allowed us to do some interesting reconnaissance on, you know, finding some of the people who are connected to these songs. But also the Fifes themselves did a lot of regional recording at a time mid-century when they used to call it song catching, and there was a folk revival going on, and people were running around trying to preserve the vernacular, and the Library of Congress would send out these discs, especially in the 40s. They would send out discs from their recording laboratory, music laboratory they called it, and they would record on-site on Presto instantaneous disc recorders. They were aluminum, 78 RPM. Lacquered discs. So we have those, and we're working on getting them digitized for this project. And we have a lot of magnetic reels as well of a lot of the songs the Fifes collected. And that's what you were hearing here. This is something that the Fifes themselves collected. Yep.
Yeah, I want to point out that Rosalie went on to make a Smithsonian Folkways record. I believe it's called Folk Songs of Idaho and Utah.
Right.
And it's all pretty. It's in a studio. She's got a guitar.
Yep.
And that's great. I mean, she's putting to the fore a lot of important songs from the region, but I write much rather, you know, he's these kind of dressed down. Mm-hmm. I'd rather like that, you know, these sort of noisy, slightly mysterious recordings. And I guess that leads me to another point I can point out is I take donations for this archive. You could record yourself on your mobile phone, or if you have a little handheld recorder and you want to send me an email or send USU an email with a song, or if you want to call us and sing it over the phone. We had Dale Benger in Cicero, New York. I guess I could pull that up. Sing down the phone to Joe.
Yep. About a song connected to Washington, her memories of her grandfather in Washington.
So. And our best guess is that this is a lampoon on Strawberry Roan.
Yeah,
but we don't
it's
actually
the same
know.
Melody.
We
it's
don't know.
Similar. Yep.
So if anyone out there knows about this song, that was kind of Dale's whole reason for calling Joe. But anyway, this lives both in USU's archives and in the Fieldwork Archive, which again, fieldworkarchive.com. Please, please get in touch if you have songs kind of like what you're about to hear.
I'm looking for the lyrics to a song that my mom used to sing when I was young. My grandpa is from Oregon, and I believe the song is from Washington State, where the wild horses roam. So here's the song. In a place called Horse Heaven, where wild horses roam, lives the king of the Mustang, a splendid blue roan. A horse of fine character, so we've been told, not a rancher could rope him, at least so we know. And that's all I can remember. So if anybody out there knows, help me out.
You want to talk about that one, Joe?
Sure. We get calls like that sometimes, and people will just wonder if you know, the two most common things are people are looking for something a family member or, you know, an ancestor had contributed to the archive, and they wonder, she was calling, wondering if we had a version of that song in our archives. Some people call us and ask for oral histories that they thought maybe their grandparents had contributed to the archives over the years. So it's.
And what is that phone number?
My phone number is 435-797-2683. You can also just Google me, Joe Kinzer, joe.kinzer@usu.edu. You can Google Special Collections and Archives at USU Libraries, or you can Google the Five Folklore Archives, and you'll find me somehow. So.
And likewise, I'm 203-460-0576. That's 203-460-0576. I've kind of become the Mother Teresa of the silly little songs out there. So feel free to share that number with a neighbor if you've ever heard the neighbor, you know, humming something while she put up clothes. You know, I'll never forget. I had a meeting with a folk revivalist. Who was that? Was it Deborah Sharp? It might have been Deborah Sharp. And we got to this cafe. I arrived early ahead of her, and the chef was singing in the back. And I said to the manager in this little cafe, you know, what's this guy singing? And pulled him out. And he kind of cut the line from this esteemed folk singer. He was singing these Puerto Rican songs, patriotic Puerto Rican songs and Pentecostal songs. And she kind of had this look on her face like, weren't you meeting me? But, you know, anyone that is singing, and he was more than happy to participate. And so sometimes there are these on-the-fly situations that arise. But, yeah, I mean, if you know of anyone out there in Radioland who you can think of that's hummed some songs or knows a couple of silly songs or bounced a kid on their knee and sang something, that's really what I'm looking for. And I think that that's a gateway into some longer oral histories if you feel compelled. That would be very useful to USU.
What is it about song, do you think? This is, it's very much tied to memory.
Yeah, I mean, the standard line for this is it's in our DNA, and you know, some of the earliest examples of song probably come from lullabies and care and soothing. I feel like in these days, associating with music and singing with entertainment, we kind of have this, it's almost like athleticizing song and singing. It's only for certain talented people, but really it's part of all of our heritage as human beings. And I think another good way to answer that question is just to jump into an example that really stayed with me from one interview we had she gave us some anchor songs, and then it became a larger interview. And this was with Bonnie Moore, who teaches in the English department at USU. She shared a song called The Farmer's Boy, which is actually a well-documented song in American folk song collections, including the Fife Archives. But what was interesting wasn't just the song itself, it was what it opened up. So at one point she said, "If you go back far enough, we all find our way back to the farm." And she teaches a course on farm lit and things like that. From there, she started talking about her family's history in the West, including ancestors who were pushed out of the region for practicing polygamy and helped establish a Colonia Diaz in Mexico. And that's really the heart of the project. The song becomes the small anchor point, and suddenly you're getting these much bigger stories about migration, identity, how families carry history forward. So I just love these examples because they're proof of concept, right? That's that really do anchor memory songs.
I want to follow up. You talk, it's a good image. The professional singing, the rise of, you know, pop music, popularization of these big time singers has athleticized.
Yeah.
The song. Yeah. Do you think that's a barrier these days for you and me to just break out into song, the family gathering or whatever?
I think it has become a little bit of a barrier. It used to be real common for people to sing as a family and after dinner for entertainment, and people still do it. Like Bonnie Moore, she said her family, she's teaching these songs to her grandkids, and they still sing communally as a group. But it is less and less. But there's still the venues that it happens. You know, a lot of times it's church or maybe a camp songs and things like that where it still occurs. And something is happening in the brain that neuroscientists call entrainment. And when we sing together, especially communally, I almost think of it as like secular prayer. Mm-hmm. But I mean, it happens in religious contexts too, but there's something that really does bring us together through the act of singing. Yes.
So given that, can I play a singing family that I've recorded?
Sure.
All right. That'll so this is the Crowfoot family. They live in Sandusfield, Massachusetts now. And it's rare, but it's out there to find singing families. And this was probably 9 people and 3 dogs, probably about 3 generations. And I'll just piggyback on the whole barrier to entry thing. You know, it's a blessing and a curse, which is such a cliche, the microphone it is, because it allows us to preserve these things. But it also did tremendous damage, not only to the breadth of folk material. You know, you had, you know, earlier on in when recording was just coming into the home, you had either hillbilly recordings or colored recordings. And that was kind of like the 2 categories. And then later on, you got Tin Pan Alley stuff and vaudeville stuff. But then, unfortunately, you got the crooners. And they could sing to a mic, get really close, not sing very loud. And so the field holler kind of died on that day. I mean, it exists and it persists a little bit, but it really changed our subconscious association with what singing could be. And so not only were we singing differently because of that, we stopped singing the old songs because we had new songs coming in. So I just wanted to remark on that as well. So I think when people say, I'm not an opera singer or I'm not a Sinatra, they are really referencing these people that are either, opera is totally the opposite of folk music. It's this echelon of wealth. Or Sinatra, who's in front of a microphone singing softly and sweetly, which was not possible in a rural farm setting. You had to holler if you were to be heard. So I have some mixed feelings on the microphone because it allows us to capture these things, but it's also transformed vocal music for better or for worse over the last 100 years.
Mm-hmm. Better watch yourself talking about a microphone in front of a radio host. Well, lamenting the microphone.
Yeah. Well, anyway.
Just as an aside, it's kind of interesting to go to an event where you're around radio guys, radio people, right? Because we're all, right. We all have become broken over the years, and we're all kind of projecting, even in conversational speech. Anyway, let's hear this.
Yeah, the singing, the Crowfoot family of Sandusfield, Massachusetts.
Nice.
That's beautiful.
I'm not expecting everyone to be at that caliber. That was pretty incredible. But
nice
even
harmonies.
Yet,
but unadorned, it's just the family.
And you can hear some scraping and bumping in the background. I was in their living room. So, you know, it does democratize this situation. You know, I'm not looking for a perfect studio situation. I mean, if I was, I'd just hire session singers to sing old folk songs. It's not the point, you know.
Yeah. So, Derek, you have said you've pulled this up so I get the quote right. Focus of your collection is on the non-singer, so someone who, you know, doesn't have a professional background, obviously. And then you go on to say that you really value unaccompanied singing, particularly if the person is not a singer.
Yeah, I think it gives a special resonance to the music that sometimes otherwise gets lost when you gussy it up with a banjo or a guitar. And it kind of has that, you know, wedding reception. Someone clanks on a glass and says, all right, speech. You know, it has, and everyone's, well, what's it going to say? You know, I don't know, it really pulls focus with a voice to be unaccompanied. You know, just have, I mean, my favorite situation is two voices together, like two sisters or whatever. But a single voice on its own, I think it cuts through anything.
Yeah. Do you have, this might, we need to go to break, but this might be a nice time to play the, what is it, the owl
sure.
song?
Yes, you'd reference this. So yeah. Aside from USU, at Utah, University of Utah, is the Lester Hubbard Collection, and I got in touch with one of Lester's descendants, Barbara Croft. She lives in Sandy, and she sang this for me down the phone. Again, a great example. I don't have to be a singer. In fact, she does not sing. I had to encourage her to sing. So that address, again, was fieldworkarchive.com. If you have anything like this, we would love to hear about it.
The one I remember really vividly, I don't know if it's one he collected, but my grandma sang it to me a lot, and I loved it and asked her to sing it. And it was "The Owl Among the Bushes Sat. When it rained, it spoiled his hat. And when it dried, he said, oh dear, for now it's looking very queer. Twitteroo, twitteroo, we'll do what other people do." She'd sing that to me, and there was another verse too, and I don't recall. It might be online, I don't know.
Was there a melody to it?
Yeah, I don't know that I can sing. "The owl among the bushes sat, and when it rained, it spoiled his hat. And when it dried, he said, oh dear, for now it's looking very queer. Twitteroo, twitteroo, we'll do what other people do. Twitteroo, twitteroo, we'll do what other people do." So, yeah, she would sing that to me, and so I'd ask for it when I went over there. And I don't remember the songs my grandfather sang. He had a guitar, and he'd play and sing. I was really little.
So her grandpa there would have been Lester Hubbard, who made a lot of film recordings.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that was a great example. She starts with the lyrics, just saying the lyrics, right? You gently encourage her to, you're not going to force people to sing, but never. Gently encourage. And then she jumps into it, does a great job. Yeah.
Twitteroo, twitteroo. I mean, it was wonderful. I mean, I put a smile on my face just now. I remember that day, and it was kind of a blah, rainy day for me in Connecticut. And I called her because I was curious about, you know, I'm always curious with archives, where are they now? You know, that kind of stuff. Where are the descendants? What are they remembering? And that made my day.
Yeah. So these are memories, obviously. This is important to her, about her grandparents, right? And then the song really pulls it out.
I think so. Yeah. And then I was able to get some shellac discs from U of U digitized and transferred over to her, which maybe we'll hear after the break.
Yeah.
I can play an example of
great.
Those.
Great. Yeah, wonderful. So, Joe, as we go to break here, got some events. I know Derek's giving some events here while he's in town. And then we can plug tomorrow's Access Utah, which I'll be interviewing the folklorist giving the Fife Honor Lecture.
Sure. Yeah. So today we have the Fife Honor Lecture, which we have annually. It's usually a folklorist, a well-known folklorist that comes here and gives a talk. And that'll be today, March 18th, at Merrill Kazir Library here at USU in room 101 at 11:30 a.m. It's a talk from Katie Borland, who is retired from the Ohio State University. And then March 19th, Derek and I will be at Logan Public Library from 6 to 7 p.m. as part of this little mini tour Derek is going on. I'm going to mostly just introduce him there, and he's going to take over. And then on the 20th, we will be back here at USU at Merrill Kazir Library at 1 p.m. That's for a dual talk, when archives talk to each other, is kind of how we framed it. And then the 21st, Saturday, we're going to do another talk at Smithfield Public Library. And that is, going to be at 11 a.m. on the 21st.
All right. So that's Derek Peter in town for about 3 days and giving those.
Well, actually, I'll be here for a week. I'm leaving Tuesday the 24th. Yeah. So please, please, listeners, fieldworkarchive.com. There's so much time to kind of get yourself to a position where you might be comfortable meeting me. I actually have people driving down from Alamo, Idaho at 2:30 today.
Oh, wow.
Who I've been in correspondence with, and they've gotten the song lists ready and did some Googling and made sure they had all the boxes ticked. And they had a couple of stuff I might play towards the end of the program. That was what my plan was anyway. They're the Durfees of Alamo, which is a pretty common name.
Yeah.
The treasure trove of some home varnished songs.
Okay, Derek be in town for a week, so get a hold of him through fieldworkarchive.com. All right, let's take a break. We'll come back more on the Intermountain Song Trails, a new project from Utah State University's Special Collections and Archives. We're inviting you to participate. Share your memory and song through this project. More following this.
Programming support here on Utah Public Radio comes from our members and the Wasserman Piano Series, presenting Garrick Olson, performing March 31st at 7:30 p.m. in the Russell Wanless Performance Hall. Tickets and information at wasserman.usu.edu. Support for Spanish language programming here on Utah Public Radio is made possible by the USU Office of Global Engagement, sending USU students to high-impact learning experiences in South America, Europe, Asia, and Australia. Learn more about programs at studyabroad.usu.edu.
On the next Putumayo World Music Hour,
we'll explore the exciting contemporary music coming from places like Hungary, the Czech Republic, and Croatia. I'm Dan Storper.
And I'm Rosalie Howard. Join us for Eastward Ho, the next Putumayo World Music Hour.
Join us Thursday night at 10 on Utah Public Radio.
Thanks for listening to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams. We have with us USU's Community and Oral History Archivist, Joe Kinzer, and we also have folklorist Derek Peter. He's also a researcher, performer. He's lead archivist and creative director of Fieldwork Archive. You can find him at fieldworkarchive.com. That's especially relevant this week, as Derek Peter will be in town for a week and is wanting you to contact him with to record your childhood memories, songs from your, I guess, your church, from work, from wherever.
Wherever. And I'm going to put my money where my mouth is. We were saying this during the break that I think I'm going to just sing the first song I can remember hearing as a kid. And it is really silly and small. And it's special to me because my family is very not musical. My dad did play the drums in college and my mom did take the flute in high school for a little while. But I come from a non-singing family. And I don't mean that they're non-singers that will sing. They're just not musical. I was the one singing to movies and CDs around the house when I was a kid. But I do remember being in preschool, 3 or 4 years old, and to get over my separation anxiety, my mom had this very short song, and it's actually an Easter egg on the archive if you can figure out where it lives. I'm not telling you, but she would just drop me off, and she would put her kind of hands pat her lap, and she'd go, "Your mommy comes back, your mommy comes back, your mom always comes back." You almost want to do the jazz hands at the end there. And I've actually mentioned this to a couple people I've recorded, and they've had longer, fuller versions of that to varying tunes because they've said, "I know that song." So it is a real song, but that's all my mom had of it. And that was like a little reassurance for me that, you know, she wasn't going to just dump me at preschool and take off for the border.
Yeah. So it was powerful for you as a 3-year-old or whatever
it's
was.
It's the only song my family ever sang. And so that's like, it's a huge treasure for me.
Yeah. You know,
that's my mother's song.
So. That's great. That's great, yeah.
I think Joe had one as well, maybe.
Core memory, yeah. Before I get to that, it just reminded me, one of our other interviewees was talking about, I had a great little line from her, which was, "My mom had a song for everything." And it's amazing how these punctuate our lives. And to be lucky enough to have that gift of many songs punctuating your life, I think is great. But like you, my mom played the trumpet, so my earliest musical memories are hearing the trumpet. But I do remember singing, the earliest song I remember singing was, "You get a line and I'll get a pole, honey. You get a line and I'll get a pole, babe. You get a line and I'll get a pole. We'll go down to the crowded hole, honey, baby mine." And so, that's the one that sticks out to me. Pretty well-known one. But
yeah, but that was sung in your family.
Yeah, I remember I had a tape, like a cassette tape of it, and we sang it all the time.
Yeah, see, it was special. You kept it. Yeah.
So
we're looking for those kinds of things. You know, they don't have to be long or very, you know, people are going to say, well, this isn't an impressive song. But I mean, I think it does. I don't know if I said this on air or not. I think I said it off air. But I have a few instances of You Are My Sunshine. And that's a song that's very widely known. But it's nice to interview people and that song comes up, because what a nice gift it is to have a family member sing that song to you. I mean, that's a beautiful thing to celebrate, you know. So the song itself may not be that unique, but interviewing someone who says, yeah, my grandma sang that to me every time we were in the car together. That's great. It's nice to know that was a thing that people grew up with. I think it makes you more well-rounded as a person emotionally.
Yeah.
And specifically for the Intermountain Song Trails component, the oral histories, they really do bring out, especially when we're tying music to memory and place, it really does end up just being a kernel for this wider narrative. And you, Derek, had mentioned that you like unaccompanied singing. And so I do want to say, like, it's quite a gift to be that vulnerable and to sing for someone else. It's a vulnerable state. So we really appreciate anyone giving that gift. But I will also take accompanied singing or memories of songs that you just describe. I had one interview of a couple of people in the valley here that grew up in a Chinese family, and they connected strongly through karaoke. And they mostly just described it. They didn't sing for me. So the oral histories can be broader than just the unaccompanied singing. If you feel more comfortable with a guitar, that's fine for me. So that's kind of our different approach. But, you know, it's great because he's doing the robust collecting of songs. And then I'm kind of selectively pulling out things for interviews. So
I want to, we'll get back to specifics, but I want to pause here a moment, have each of you talk about this, pull out to, you know, the overview. What does it, as you collect all of these songs, maybe I'll start with you, Derek. You've been busy collecting all of these songs and memories at fieldworkarchive.com. What's the overall picture that we get, do you think, from all of these together?
Well, I always say in my lectures, I want the pods to come down and attach to your brain and suck all the data out. Because if I could do that with every individual on this earth, sycophantic, horrible, dystopian dream, you would get migration patterns of songs. And so as far as possible, if I know the provenance of a certain folk song, you know, I went to Creston, North Carolina. Amy Michaels sang Darling Nellie Gray, and her uncle sang her that song, and he was from Noble, Indiana, and I think he was born in 1896. I might be getting my facts wrong on my own archive there a little bit, but I'm trying to illustrate that shows a clear through line of this song came from this person who was from this place, and now it lives on in this person who's in this other place. And those little arrows on the map, which we eventually hope to have, and I'd like a map on my archive as well one day, but there's 1,700 songs right now, so the aftercare is going to take probably a decade at this point. Anyhow, that is kind of the goal, because I, as far as possible, if I know where the song came from and who sang it and where their forebear was from and what year they were born, that's really interesting to me. So someone was in, I was in Iceland for a week last year. Someone was in Reykjavik and they sang me a Chinese song. You know, I went down to West Virginia and someone had a Hungarian lullaby. I mean, these things excite me terribly when you kind of go against the norm of the place, because someone has come from a place and carried that song with them, and they can, you know, preserve it in a locale that hasn't, you know, it's at odds, but it hasn't gotten scrubbed away.
Mm-hmm. Joe, what would you say about that question? The overall, you know, the meaning, if you look at an archive as a whole.
Yeah, holistically, that's kind of what archives deal in, right? Aggregates. So especially the legacy of the archives, the fiefs, and that mid-century impetus to collect broad broadly and widely. So a lot of folklorists were doing that at the time. They were collecting. We have in our folklore archives the Wayland Hand collection, which is about 600,000 index cards of what they called at that time superstition and popular belief. And so, so what's changed is that now we're thinking more of immersive ethnography and less about the breadth and more about how can we do a deep dive. So that's why I take the kernels, which are the little snippets, and then do a deep dive into memory and oral history and things like that. So.
And I'll just piggyback on that and say, because earlier before the break, you'd asked the question about singing and how, you know, we talked about family singing and the vulnerability of singing. But just from my own, what makes me tick as a musician, because I was a musician for many, many years before I became a field worker or a folklorist or whatever you want to call me, an archivist, whatever. That's been about 6 years of a 15-year career. I just think music is the most excellent thing on the planet. And it's unreal when an everyday person who's never been in front of a microphone before will get in front of one, produce some music through their mouth usually, although fiddle players, whatever. And then they want that to live permanently. And to me, that's like the ultimate triumph. It's kind of like there's a, if you zoom into the dust and the carpet, there's a little cathedral of Notre Dame there. You know, it's like there's this magic kind of in everyone, and even the lady in the grocery store who's, you know, counting her pennies on the quarter counter and you want to kill her, you know, she's got this fantastic song in her, the backs of her memory. Everyone can do this stuff. So I think it's a really democratizing way of injecting a little magic, and then it really is therapy for people to remember this stuff. I mean, that's why music therapists exists. You know, you remember all the old songs. So, but for me, it's about the power of music and the fact that it can live in even kind of the most, like, person you wouldn't look twice at in the grocery store, and yet they have these songs. It's incredible to me.
That's the most striking thing of what you're doing to me, is like that connection you're making. I think people are so excited to share this stuff. That's what always strikes me, is the energy that comes from people when they're sharing.
Let's go to another break. So we mentioned again fieldworkarchive.com.
Yep, and 203-460-0576. Blow me up. Send me texts. Send me singing voicemails. But yes, fieldworkarchive.com, 203-460-0576. I want to hear your silly little songs.
All right. And Joe Kinzer, tell me about the several events happening.
Sure. Yeah.
One of those today.
Yep. At 11:30 at the Merrill Kazir Library, USU Library, we have Katie Borland of The Ohio State University giving a talk. It's the Fife Honor Lecture. It's a talk in folklore.
Let me just interject. I'm sure. Looking forward to a conversation with Katie Borland tomorrow in Access, Utah. Mm-hmm. Glad we have a chance to plug her event today. And she's going to be talking about miracle narratives and the corollary curses, folklore surrounding that. That's going to be a fun conversation tomorrow in Access, Utah. But get to the lecture, 11:30 today in the library if you can.
Sure. It's called Beyond the Monologue, Storytelling as Collaborative World Making. So it's open to the public, room 101. It's right when you walk into the library to the left.
And then there's some events featuring Derek Peter.
Yes. So we are going to be at Logan Public Library, and that's going to be...
It's tomorrow at 6 p.m.?
Yeah, I had it pulled up here. Now I've lost it.
Tomorrow at 6 p.m.
6 p.m., Logan Public Library. And then Friday, we're going to give a talk at USU Library, again in room 101, When Archives Talk to Each Other, Folk Song Memory and Intermountain Song Trails, room 101 at 1:30. And then Saturday at 11 a.m., there's going to be a similar talk at Smithfield Library.
All right.
Thanks for them hosting us.
Yeah, excellent. Well, let's take a break. We'll come back with more following this break.
The novel and movie Project Hail Mary imagines that humans have finally made contact with extraterrestrials. We talked to its author, Andy Weir.
I really wanted this alien species to be truly alien. It does not look like a person. It's not comfortable in our atmosphere.
We consider the science in science fiction on the next Big Picture Science.
Tune in Sunday morning at 11 here on UPR.
Hi, this is Steve Williams, and you can tune in for a selection of jazz music from the Jazz Time with Steve Williams Archives. Public radio is where jazz music lives. Nowhere else. It really doesn't. So, Please make contributions next week. We're in the pledge drive, so it's always appreciated that listeners who enjoy the music also make their contribution to keep it going. That's Sunday from 6 to 10 p.m. here on Utah Public Radio.
Thanks for listening to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams. We're talking about a new project from Utah State University's Special Collections and Archives. They're launching a new oral history initiative titled Intermountain Song Trails. And they're inviting residents across the Intermountain West to share memories of the songs they grew up with. And the project will explore how songs travel across generations, families, and migration routes. From lullabies passed down at home to work songs, ballads, railroad songs, cowboy songs, church or scouting traditions. And we're talking with Joe Kinzer, who's USU's community and oral history archivist, and Derek Peter, folklorist and archivist of the Fieldwork Archive. You can find him at fieldworkarchive.com. We're hearing some songs and associated memories as well. So, Joe Kinzer, tell me again kind of the range of, you have mentioned descendants of Chinese railroad workers. That's one. Maybe descendants of Mormon pioneers could be another one. Just in your family as well, but what's kind of the range you're looking for?
Well, we have a lot of representation from Mormon pioneers, and they were really good about passing on their songs and lots of things culturally, which is great. And we have a lot of examples of that in the Fife archives and beyond. But we're also looking to diversify that and just get a little bit broader snapshot of the communities in the region and all the different and the crossroads that this region was, especially in the progressive era of the United States and all the immigration patterns and histories. So it's really broad for me. The Intermountain Song Trails project itself can be fairly broad. So if you think you don't fit, don't question yourself. You can get in touch. So,
all right. Very good. So Derek Peter, maybe could play another example?
Yeah, I'm actually going to play something that I recorded 3 years ago. I had two filmmakers, Trevor Christensen and Jasmine Stack, did a little documentary that's in progress about my field work, kind of when the archive was more in its infancy. And hopefully that'll be finished later this year or next year. And Jasmine had a Swiss-German song that her mother used to sing. So, you know, again, about place and migration. I mean, this is someone that lives in Salt Lake City, came out to Connecticut. And so this was sort of I didn't, you know Joe at this point in time, but it's a nice addendum to what we're doing. I'm going to play the version where she gets the lyrics wrong because she went and kind of researched the German later and cleaned it up and sang a different take. But I like the sort of telephone version that she could remember honestly. Mm. So this is Jasmine Stack with Volutzen auf Wakizoi. So what is this particular song called?
I actually don't know. I don't know the name of it. I probably could ask my mom and find out. She might know. But here's how it goes. Volotsan gagavaki shul, yololoriri, yololorida, dreit mer weg no strumpf no schuhe, yololoriri, yolo. Yolo, yololiri, yololoriri, yololorida, yolo, yololiri, yololoriri, yolo.
And then do you want to do some, like, the verses you would tell?
Yeah.
Because you would invent them, right?
You would invent them as you go. So, yeah, let me think. Sadie's a dog that wants to be pet. Yololoriri, yololorida.
So what she's illustrating there is, you know, they would do the German, but then because they were kids with, you know, their mom, you know, I am sitting in a radio room, yolalalidi, yolalalida. I mean, you could add anything to it. So they would just make up, you know, improv stuff on top of the melody all the time. So I really like that. And, you know, Jasmine lives in Salt Lake City. So does Trevor Christensen. I think he's at the Salt Lake Tribune now, I think is his new position. A wonderful documentarian amazing ability to become invisible. I mean, he could be 3 inches from your face and you didn't know he was there. Mm-hmm. And I don't use video cameras in my field work. I just find them very intrusive. But Trevor has this incredible talent to get very close to a performer like a ninja. You wouldn't know he's there. It's incredible. But I was really pleased to meet them. And like I say, that's sort of the addendum. Those are the end papers of the Intermountain Song Trails, because these are recordings I made before Joe was even a twinkle.
Mm-hmm. Well, we do collect singing games, which is they're sometimes called. That's a perfect example. They tend to have improvisatory elements and made up parts, and so I would love to have more of those kinds of things in our archive. Mm.
Joe, you've I'm quoting. I should give credit here. I'm quoting from a story in the Utah Statesman, which is the student newspaper. Essence Barnes did this article and talked about you gentlemen. You're quoted here as saying that some of the recordings you've already received have been surprisingly but beautifully ordinary. I love that phrase.
Yeah, it's kind of like what Derek has been talking about. Sometimes it's better even when, oh, I don't remember that line, or we always just made this up at this point, and here's an example of that, or there's background noise and things like that. I think that really is the proof of concept too, of just how these songs live in almost all of us. Mm-hmm. Some kind of song lives in you.
And true to form, I got Essence Barnes to sing for the archive.
Right. Wonderful.
You know, they published the article for us, and I am sincerely asking everyone. So this is proof of concept that Essence was in touch with me, and I said, the point of the Intermountain Song Trails is to generate recordings of people from this region. So what do you have? And this was the song.
My name is Essence Barnes. I'm currently living in Logan, Utah, and I learned this song from my grandma. Her name is Kate Christensen, and she grew up in West Valley, Utah. And it goes like this. Mares eat oats and does eat oats and little lambs eat ivy. A kid'll eat ivy too, wouldn't you?
Beautiful. That's very, very common, but has special meaning with her and her grandmother.
Yeah, and then the provenance of where the grandmother came from. Mm-hmm. And, those are things I really value. I really like when people can name their ancestor and tell me where they came from. To honor the ancestral quality of these songs is important. And I've interviewed a few descendants of famous folk singers. I've interviewed descendants of Frank Prophet, Almeda Riddle, and Texas Gladden. I don't know if any of you out there in Radio Land will know those names. Maybe Frank Prophet. Mm-hmm. And the musical DNA of the way that folk singer's voice is so well preserved in their descendant is uncanny. I could play some examples back to back, but I'm going to just lean on the Utah stuff instead today with the clips. So just trust me. If you go listen to Brenda Riddle, I thought it was Almeda. It gave me goosebumps the whole phone call. And when I met with Ed Prophet, who's Frank Prophet's son, Frank Prophet had another singing son, Frank Prophet Jr., who had a whole career. But Ed was a locksmith his whole career. And yet, when he opened his mouth and sang, you'd swear it was his father. Mm. And so there is something very, scientists probably don't have the machines to measure this yet, but there's something very coded in our DNA about singing, and particularly folk song. It's like a little replica. It's amazing. Like when you have your mom's eyes or something, but you have your mom's voice instead.
Yeah. Well, we've reached the end of our allotted time, so let's give people some information how they can become involved in the Intermountain Song Trails. So, first, Derek Peter, how can people reach you?
Fieldworkarchive.com, fieldwork-archive.com. You don't need the hyphen, but it'll get you there faster. It will redirect after a time. So that's the Fieldwork Archive. I think you can just Google that at this point. It'll come right to the top. Or my cell, call or text, send me a voicemail, singing voicemail, 203-460-0576, 203-460-0576.
And you're looking for songs and associated memories.
Of all kinds.
Of all kinds, yeah, great.
Right.
So Joe Kinzer.
And then I'm taking those songs as kernels for oral histories. So if you're interested in doing a little bit of a longer form interview, especially related to music and place in this region, you can Google Intermountain Song Trails. There's several things about it that you can click on and find my contact info. You can also reach me at joe.kinzer, K-I-N-Z-E-R, at usu.edu.
And the Fife Honor Lecture featuring Katie Borland from Ohio State University will be giving that lecture today. Today, that's the one we want to mention that today. Go to that today on the USU campus, USU, the Merrill Kazir Library, 11:30.
Yep, 11:30, room 101.
She'll be talking about miracle narratives, the folklore surrounding miracles and curses. Mm-hmm. And then some events featuring yourself and Derek Peter.
Sure. So again, we are doing a talk tomorrow at Logan Public Library at 6 p.m., and then Friday, a talk at USU Library, again in room 101, Merrill Kazir Library, and that'll be at 1:30, and then Saturday at Smithfield Library at 11 a.m.
All right. Well, we've been talking about the Utah State University Special Collections and Archives launching a new oral history initiative. It's titled Intermountain Song Trails, and we want you to participate. So we've been talking with Derek Peter, folklorist, researcher, performer, lead archivist, and creative director of the Fieldwork Archive. Find that once again at fieldworkarchive.com. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you for having us.
And Joe Kinzer is community and oral history archivist at Utah State University. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks, Tom.
Thanks, everybody, for listening to Access Utah.